Good morning, Wake Up HEC, Cris Oviedo with you and live with Chris. And today we are going to have a conversation about something that may or may not be in your mind. You know, this month of October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And I don't know that this is something that we think about too much when we are, you know, just regular people going in our daily lives. We think about it for corporations. We think about, you know, corporations need to make sure that they have our information secure, that they are doing everything that they can to protect their information. But how about when we are at home? How about what can we do as consumers? Because with COVID, with the pandemic, right before we went live, one of my guests was saying, you know, the stock market has changed and Zoom is now worth billions of dollars. And Zoom is in each one of our households. We are always online. We're purchasing things online. Through the pandemic, we had to do work, school, shopping, of everything online. So we are more and more in the web these days. And we want to make sure that we protect ourselves. And that's a conversation that we're going to have today, because I, as a consumer, I can't say that I know how to protect myself, that I understand, you know, the threats that are out there. I am aware of the emails that we get sometimes, right? I am aware of the, hey, I have billions of dollars sitting here for you from your cousin, far, far, far away cousin. And I know that that's a scam, right? And I think we're familiar with that. But I do have to say, the other day I got an email from a person that I know. I checked the email address and it looked like a Gmail. It was a Gmail address. It wasn't one of those long addresses. It looked like a real email. And I replied. It caught me by surprise. It was a person that doesn't really have a lot of communication with me. But there was nothing that, other than that, that indicated to me that maybe this could be a scam. So I replied and I said, good to hear from you. The answer did give it away, because they started looking for, I need gift cards. I needed to buy gift cards for my niece, this and that and the other. But that made me an awareness that, you know, this people who are out there are getting more and more sophisticated. They're finding ways to really lure you in and to really, really present themselves as somebody that you might know. And I can certainly see why somebody might just slip and fall into that kind of trap. So to talk about that and to bring a little more awareness about the importance of, you know, taking care of our cyber world, I have two guests with me this morning. I have Patrick Valdivia. He's the manager of computing and cyber lab services here at Howard Community College. And I have Song Lee. He's the director of student computer support. I want to thank you and welcome you both for joining me this morning, for spending this time with me, and for helping us all become more aware of, you know, what cybersecurity is, because that's kind of a new word still, I feel, you know, what that really means, what that is, what are those threats that are out there, what are those scams that are out there, what we should be looking for, and also things that we can do to protect ourselves. And before we get to all of that good information, I just want to start by getting to know each one of you a little bit more. So Patrick, we're going to start with you. If you can just tell us about yourself and what inspired you to pursue a career that was related to computers and to the cyber world. Thank you again for joining me and welcome.
Sure. So I started in high school. I started doing some self-study, first HTML, then Perl, then Java programming. And that was very difficult to learn. But eventually I became, now I teach Java at HCC. And so I learned sort of the hard way through college classes how to do object-oriented programming. And now I teach that subject. But cyber is newer to me. It's a newer subject. I actually started in cyber when I was here. And it's, you know, cyber, HCC has actually been doing cybersecurity since 2002. Our program was founded in 2002. And, you know, it's a fantastic program. I'm just, you know, continuously learning about cybersecurity in my career here.
And I thank you for saying that, because I feel like and this is going to sound funny, it's maybe going to date me a little bit, right? But so I remember being the young person at the house, right? And my mom and you know, those ahead of me, trying to figure out technology and being like, how do you know these things? And it was just so intuitive to me, right? Well, I am now a mom. I now have younger people in my home, and I'm finding myself in that boat, right? Where even though I'm working with technology, even though I feel like I am staying abreast of it, there are so many things that I have to call on my kids for. And now I know that they're looking at me like, mom, you know, you're old, sorry to tell you, but you're not staying up to date. And for you that you're working here, you just said, you know, I continue to learn. And I think that's one of the things it's a challenge maybe with cybersecurity and everything that's technology related. It's that it keeps moving so fast. It's so hard to stay up to date with it and to keep up with all of the new things that are coming. And we get comfortable doing things in one way. And, you know, speaking of security and thinking about like passwords, right? Passwords, I remember that I was able to type something really easy, a word that was really easy. Nowadays, you have to make it into this complicated, even Google gives you this really complicated, long, that don't have a whole lot of meaning kind of phrases, right? Like sentences, because it's much more important to start even thinking about the way that we create our passwords in a different way so that it protects us better. So, you know, and it takes comfort, it takes relearning, and it takes continuing to advance that relationship with technology and with security and cybersecurity in the cyber world. Song, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us about your role here at HCC as the director of the student computer support.
So I've been using computers since high school, and that was a long time ago. And at that time, the internet really there was no internet. And I first used the internet when I was in college, and it was just a lot of educational institution connecting together, no browser. And then right about the time, I think when I was a junior and senior, the web was sort of introduced, and it was very static and it was very interesting. I primarily used the internet to chat with friends in other colleges. It was never commercialized. And you know, if I really look back, like certain things, like for example, like domain names, like at that moment, internet wasn't commercialized. It was primary use for education. And so that's how I kind of got into the internet. I didn't live with it like a lot of the new generation. So I know what it was before. And then for me at Howard Community College, I manage a team of 16 people, and we are responsible for making sure all the computers in the labs, the laptops are functioning. We have services that provide those systems. And so because they're all, the thing with cyber for me specifically is, even though the college has its own network, so every computer that's connected wirelessly and wired, they're all connected to the college's network, but we are also connected to the internet. And so what that does is when you're connected to the internet, everyone has access to the internet, not everyone per se, but anyone that joins the internet or connects to some service. And because of that, that's where we have to make sure we're doing our due diligence to protect data, protect the systems that we have. And so we didn't think about that a couple of years ago because internet wasn't used so much like 20 years ago or so. But now since internet is everyone's using it throughout the world, and they're using it wirelessly more now through their phones. And because of that, there's more bad things that can happen. So we're constantly making sure that we're preventing that.
You know, you just said something. I mean, before you didn't even think about it, cybersecurity almost like wasn't a thing, right? That we needed to worry about. You said it was not commercialized. It was not what it is today. So there were no fences kind of thing, right? In the cyber world. Whereas now, you know, we're having full conversations and we're trying to impart this information to everybody who's out there, because It is important. So let's, you know, let's define, Patrick, if you can help us define exactly what cybersecurity is. You know, what are we talking about here?
Sure. So let me echo some of the thought leaders in the field when I say that cybersecurity is really about data care. And it's not even all technical. Cybersecurity encompasses a wide variety of fields. It's everything from accounting to law to policymaking to auditing. Cybersecurity is a whole ecosystem of careers. That being said, at Howard Community College, we do focus on a bit of the technical side of the training. That in essence is a general definition for cybersecurity.
Song, if you could give us like, you know, if we could take what Patrick just explained to us and make it more like day-to-day life, right? Cybersecurity. I mean, you encompassed everything, Patrick, through your definition of cybersecurity. If we were to bring it home, Song, how would you explain what cybersecurity is?
So if you like in the beginning intro where you talked about how people are using the internet more. So we depend on it. And because of COVID and all people couldn't go outside and interact like in restaurants and their banks, it was literally closed. And so everything was online. All the services has to be online, which meant that our information as a consumer, we had to go through some device to the internet. And so that meant my credit card, my personal information is stored somewhere. And so because of that, I think cybersecurity is becoming more important, because if you don't protect, if you yourself don't protect and the company themselves don't protect that data and it's lost, what would happen? And so this is where, as a consumer, you could lose your credit, you could lose your identity, which means that in the past, your identity might have been stolen because you left, you know, like your driver's license or your credit card, your physical something. But nowadays, they don't even have to be physically close to you. They can go and breach a commercial system and then steal your identity. Or your computer could be infected because you clicked on an email that you shouldn't have. And all of a sudden, the bad actor or threat is in your system, harvesting your data, which means there's a potential that that information could be used for other things, which means you might get a credit card call from your bank to say, did you spend such and such on a vendor? And so this is where it does have an impact. And because our identity is sort of all tied in. And so I think it's important to practice, good cyber hygiene. And I think this is, we'll be talking more about that.
Okay. No, you just freaked me out a little bit, because I just shared this interchange, right? This exchange that I had via email with somebody that clearly on that second email, it was obvious to me that it was a scam. So after you've engaged in a conversation via email like that with somebody, should you be checking your computer for malware then? Is this something that I should be thinking about? You know, because I received this email that came from a Gmail address that was attached to the name of a person that I know. When I saw that the email was a Gmail address, I thought, okay, maybe they changed their email and that's why they're reaching out to me. It looked very non-threatening. It was just greetings, how are you? Haven't talked to you in a little bit. Reply when you have a chance, right? Like it was very non-threatening. It looked very, very much like an email from a person that I know. And I replied back to that email. So when we fall into those traps, should I be, or should we be, if somebody else is on the same boat as me, right? Should we be then, you know, checking our computer? Could something have been installed because I replied back to that email? Or do we actively have to click on a link from an email in order for something to be, installed into our computer?
So most likely you would have to click on a link and then download a software, and then that software would be executed on your computer. Now, sophisticated attack, which are like state sponsored. I can give you an example recently with the Apple phone. So Apple phone with you needed to do an update, and it was an emergency update from Apple, because what happened was someone within, I think, the UAE received a text message. So they received the text message and they didn't think twice about it, but it was unusual. And they reported to this Citizens Lab in Canada. So these are cybersecurity researchers. And these researchers reviewed that information and found out that that text message, again, you still have to click on that link in the text message, would download a software and then would sort of own your device, which means that they have full access to the Apple phone, that they could see all the texts, all the email, access to the camera. And so, yes, it still does require some action. So this is where you have to be, I think, very suspicious. In real life, you wouldn't even think twice. If someone says, look behind, you'll kind of check that out. But in the cyber world, you have to practice a little more suspicion.
And I think that that's where, you know, where do we draw that line? And when we get those pop-ups and when we get those little messages, it's really difficult. It's really, really difficult to tell which ones are coming from a good source and which ones are coming from a bad source. So, which leads me perfectly into our next question, Patrick, and maybe you can help us, you know, kind of think about this concept. So like we said at the beginning, this month is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And, you know, the topic, the theme, it's around be cyber smart. How do we become cyber smart? What does that mean? What does cyber smart mean?
Sure. So in my view, being cyber smart is all about developing good habits. And it's very difficult to develop good habits. You can easily develop a bad habit and then have it be hard to correct. You know, I've even myself been caught by phishing simulations at HCC. And the way I was caught was that I was clicking through emails too fast. And I accidentally clicked a link that I shouldn't have. It turned out only to be a simulation. So it was fortunate that that was the case. But that could have, you know, in a non-simulation scenario, that could have been a breach. You know, I think that it's difficult to develop good habits, but we need to practice them continuously in order to improve our cyber posture.
You talked about simulation. For those of us who are not very versed in the cyber world, you talked about simulation and then if it actually had been a breach. Can you help us define what that means? You know, what's the difference between the simulation that you got and that you clicked on and what that meant versus what a full breach would have been?
Well, I think a breach, actually, I'm going to let Sung answer this question to give a definition around this.
So Howard Community College too, because you want to have a safe place to click on an email and then learn from it. And that's the whole purpose. So because what typically happens with people that want you to click on something, they do social engineering. So like the email that you saw, it was hint of a friend that was a Gmail. So they either the person in the bad world reviewed, has some reconnaissance information, because the go of a bad actor is to have you click on that link. How do they go about doing that? And that's where social engineering component comes through. And so for in an enterprise environment to kind of train that, how do you train something that you shouldn't be sort of expecting? And so that's where the simulation comes in. Like the military, they simulate like a war game kind of event. And so not this isn't a war per se, but what enterprise usually do is they simulate a phish email that you can click on, but you should learn from it. And so it's safe because the fact that if you do click on it, nothing really happens. It's a simulation and you can press that redo button. And what Patrick talked about as in a breach, if it wasn't a simulation and you did click on it and then you did run that software, then you could have a software running in your computer that could be doing many different things. Good, you know, probably bad, you know. Some of them are very benign. Some of them are like, it'll run on your computer to harvest cryptocurrency. So it's just using your computer to mine crypto. Other one is stealing your identity.
I wouldn't want either one of those unless I was going to benefit from the crypto that they're going to be harvesting on my computer. Patrick, you talked about looking at your emails and going through your emails too fast. And Sung, you mentioned the term cyber hygiene. I wonder if either one of you guys can talk a little bit more about that, because I have a feeling that when we're talking about cyber hygiene, we're not talking about cleaning our screens, you know, in the physical software, although that's important to do as well. I mean, that's the physical hard word, but actually, you know, I think that cyber hygiene is looking at, you know, something like what you described, Patrick, like the speed that you're looking at and kind of like looking closely at the emails and looking maybe for clues and things like that. So if you can help us open up that world of cyber hygiene and what that means for us as consumers, I'll let either one of you guys take this on.
Cyber hygiene, you know, I think it's about doing there's a lot of ways to protect yourselves from cyber attacks. I've kind of got a list. Use strong passwords and two-factor authentication on critical applications. Don't reuse passwords. Don't share your credentials. Don't store your credentials in a file on your computer. Don't use public Wi-Fi. Be skeptical about opening emails and especially about clicking attachments or following links. Be cautious about how you store and transmit data. Email is generally not safe. And install updates in a timely manner. Now, that's a lot to remember. But if you focus on some of these different cyber hygiene aspects, you know, just focus on an individual one and think about how you can best accomplish those tasks individually. I think eventually you build up a sort of repertoire and you're going to be able to practice cyber hygiene effectively more often.
I would like to add something to that. So the reason why the term cyber hygiene, I don't recall who actually copyrighted that term, but it's physically the same thing where, you know, during COVID, everyone had to wash their hands for 20 seconds, keep social distance, wear a mask. These are things you do to not be infected. And it's similar. If you don't want to get those bad software, you just follow these simple steps like Patrick talked about. And it's the easy way to do it. You know, there are harder things, but these are, I believe, easy things just to practice.
And, you know, Patrick, I am going to ask you to forward that list to me, and I'm going to put it on the comments of our conversation, because you're right. And for somebody like me, who's not thinking about this, it's going to be hard to remember those tips that you just gave us, but I think they're valuable. So after a conversation, whenever you have a minute, if you can email those to me, we'll make sure to put them on the comments here on our conversation, because it is important. It is important to start thinking about, you know, not getting infected, which I think it's a wonderful way of explaining it, Song, and the relevance of it right now. You know, maybe COVID is helping us to become more aware of the need of cyber hygiene and why it is important for us. But, you know, thinking about that, maybe somebody's still a little reluctant and saying, okay, I heard Song and he said that my identity can get stolen, but big deal. I can, if once I realize that something's happening with my credit or something, I can just go ahead and block that. It's easy. It's not a big deal. Right. So maybe somebody's like, why is it really so important? Like, why are we making such a big deal? Why do we have a full month dedicated to talking about cybersecurity and to become more cyber smart? So Patrick, if you want to just, you know, tell us why it is important that we all start paying attention to cybersecurity, and it is important that we start exercising cybersecurity so that maybe we can inspire some of the people out there who are thinking, that's too much work, you know, having to go back and change all of my passwords and making them stronger. I'm sorry, but that's a little too much time.
Sure. So I think the answer to this question is that, you know, I don't think anybody on this call would fall into the category of apathetic. I think everybody on this call would be interested. However, there are a lot of individuals that choose apathy, but it's important to remind those individuals that apathy, the choice of apathy in the case of cybersecurity, can lead to very bad things. It can lead to your social media account being compromised, perhaps your bank account, real loss of financial assets, and you could actually lose your job for negligence. So, you know, the threats are real, the impacts on you are real, and I hope that convinces people that there is importance to cybersecurity.
Absolutely. I mean, you talked about even losing your job over cybersecurity. I don't think that maybe we had made that connection before. Song, talk to us a little bit about some of the different types of cyber attacks, cyber threats that are out there that maybe we should be aware of?
So most of the things we hear about is in businesses. And what we don't talk about, like you don't hear about one person losing their identity and how it sort of impacts them. So a couple of years ago, the editor of Wired wrote an article about his experience regarding his identity theft. So what happened was the person went in through his account, got access to Gmail, and used Gmail as a jump point to everything else. So this person had a bank account, this had had other accounts in the internet, and they reset all their accounts. How did they do that? They went through their password reset, and to do reset, you just say, okay, I don't know my password, email it to me. And it did, because they have full access to their Gmail account. So they reset their bank account, their credit card, their iTunes, all these digital music they lost because it transferred or deleted. And so it ruined the person's life. I mean, it took many months to a year to a couple of years to kind of make it clean, because once you lose of that, you have to convince people. I mean, you have to convince corporations and your banks that it's not you. So it's a hassle. You don't want to go through something like that. And why not practice some of the things that Patrick talked about? And that's where Patrick talked about multi-form factor. It became a big deal because anyone can take your password and your username. I mean, if you accidentally, and hopefully people don't do that. And so that's why you want to have multi-form factor. For businesses, ransomware has been one of the biggest. So IBM did a survey and they determined in 2021, an average breach cost around $4.8 million. That is not the total loss of, you know, the breach itself, but the records. These are account for people's time, insurance, and recovery of productivity. And so for businesses, it's costly. And you know, big companies too, because depending on how big the breach is, ransomware, for example, you're talking the most recent one that happened locally here at Howard University. So Howard University had an idea that it was having a breach, or breach of through ransomware, and they shut systems down, so students didn't have access to their coursework. So it made things very inconvenient, because once you're used to it. And I read this recently, which was in Alabama, Springfield, a ransomware is now supposed to have actually killed someone. And this is where a cyber attack actually did damage to a point where what happened was, in that hospital, they were hit with ransomware. And once you're hit with ransomware, your system becomes, you can't use it. And what typically happens in those scenarios, you go back to the manual process. But in a hospital where you're relying on technology for, you know, speed of alerts, in this scenario, what happened, from what I've read, and this was reported in the Washington Journal, Wall Street Journal, it was that the patient checked in, had some issues, but the system was down, and so they're using a manual process, and the baby basically had complications, and then left the hospital, and then eventually died, and then the parents are suing the hospital, and during the court record, it was the evidence was that the nurses, you can see the text message between the nurse and the doctors, and it says this was preventable, which sort of means this ransomware in turn caused this problem. And so now it's gotten to a point where, you know, gas prices were high because of the Colonial attack, and meat prices are high because of the JBS attack with ransomware. And so it's an impact that people are seeing more of. And it's not something that you just can just say, okay, it's another person, another company. It does have an impact.
And, you know, I will admit, I did not read why, but we had that 6 hour block where we didn't have access to Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, right? Social media apps. WhatsApp is a little more of a communication. And I know, like, my husband, he uses that a lot for communicating with his team and, you know, his clients. So something seemingly small that's really just affecting our social media, right? The pages that, yes, we use for advertising, but hopefully our businesses are not just relying on that, right? In order to operate. But that was a huge lesson, in my opinion, for all of us that one, we are super dependent for entertainment, for business, and many other things of our technology. And two, we didn't know what to do with ourselves and we felt totally lost and we felt that we were not communicating and we felt isolated just because we didn't have access to those platforms for 6 hours. You're taking it way beyond that, Song, with that example that you just gave us. And that's where I want to go. I want to go into, you know, a little more at home because I have heard, you know, of the stories and I know that maybe, many of the people watching have seen and heard about them too, where, you know, there was somebody who had access to the cameras, right? We've installed cameras in our home and people got access to the cameras and they were using them. They got access to the monitor that we were using for TV and they were watching us. You know, this things like that, we have our phones and like you said earlier, somebody got a hold of that, or there's this idea that they're always watching, they're always listening. So I want to talk about that and, you know, things that maybe we should be looking out for that would give us this, a red flag, maybe that maybe something is up. Are there ways in which we can find, because you talked about identity theft, and I think that unless I have money in my account and the money suddenly just disappears of my account, I don't know how else I would be able to tell that somebody's using my identity. You know, I don't think that there's an easy way, unless I go and check my credit on a regular basis, that I'll be able to know that something is going on with my identity. So what are some things that we should be doing? And I'll start with Song and Patrick. If you have anything to add, please do. You know, red flags that we should be looking for, both in our hardware, right? In like their phones and like our cameras and like our computers that we're using, but also as we're protecting our identity, what are some of the things that we should be doing on a regular basis to protect ourselves?
So definitely on your phone, like the apps that you download, I think your phone is more secure than a computer. The reason why is because your phone, you don't really have like super admin privileges. Like on your computer, you might, because on a computer, you can install software from any location. On an Apple phone and an Android phone, you have to like go through a store, Apple Store or Google Play. And so there are companies that are looking out for the consumer to make sure they're getting the right application. Again, nothing is perfect. For identity, I would say, definitely, depending on how extreme you want to get to protecting your identity, the number one advice people would give is to freeze your credit. And you have to do that with the 3 credit agencies. And what that does is basically it doesn't allow anyone to look at your credit. So if someone stole your identity, you're like, okay, I don't really care. So they take your social security number, they apply for a credit card, and they try to do that. What happened is the credit agency will try to look up your credit, and they can't do that because it's frozen. Again, it's inconvenient if you yourself is trying to get a mortgage or credit, because it won't work. And so that's to the extreme, but it's a good way of doing it. The other way is doing credit monitoring, which is a service that you will pay depending on how much you want to get to know your credit. Other thing is the current systems that you have, your banks, your credit card, you want to get alerts. So if there's any suspicious activity, and the banks do that for you, like if they see a credit card transaction that is outside your zip code or your state, they might call you and say, it's just you. And so some companies do take that proactive measure, but you, as a consumer, you want to make sure you're doing your part to do that. Recognizing in your computer or your phone. So I would say if your computer is maybe acting slower than normal, and this is where you can get technical. And I think Patrick can talk about maybe taking some classes at Howard to know about these things, where you can do some forensics analysis to see, okay, I think I see something that's not normal. And that's how you can kind of start out. And Patrick can kind of jump in.
Sure. So we have programs in cybersecurity at Howard Community College, a AA program, as well as their certificate program in network security administration, as well as computer forensics technology, AA and certificate programs. So these are fantastic programs, as I mentioned before. The cybersecurity program is accredited by the NSA and the DoD as a cybersecurity center of academic excellence in cyber defense. And the cyber forensics program is also accredited. I'm forgetting the agency right now, but it's a DoD crime center, I believe. So we do have fantastic programs, and you can learn a lot about these topics at HCC.
Patrick, tell us about those accreditations and what that means, and how that makes our students, you know, people who come to HCC stand out when they are ready to maybe go look for a job in the market.
So these accreditations are standardized, and they hold us to standards that we teach the right subjects, and that we teach them to, and that we achieve competency in different topic areas. So the accreditations really really make us strive to be a better institution academically, and you know, therefore we have to actually look at our student body and say, are we meeting the goals of the program and evaluating our program?
So it's pushing us to continue to be better and do better for ourselves and for our students. You talked about certificates, and you talked about the actual AA degree. Tell us a little bit more about that differentiation, what one does versus the other.
Sure. So the AA degree is a degree program. You know, it's 60 credits. 30 of the credits will be on the technical track, and 30 of the credits will be in you know, gen ed or other areas within the college. The career certificate tracks are just for that. They're for people who want to you know, continue with work straight out of community college.
Do you already have to be for the certificates? I'm thinking maybe, you know, somebody who's not in any type of cybersecurity or any kind of even computer related field job right now, right? But that's their passion. That's what they want to do. And they know that. And they're thinking, I don't know that I want to go and get my AA right now. I just would like to go and get my certificate and start working. Is that a possibility, or do they need to have some sort of background already?
So absolutely, it's a possibility. And we have examples of that. One of our adjunct faculty, Stephanie Bryce, used to be a veterinarian. And she actually started HCC, took the Cisco program, the Cisco certificate program, and completed it, and then became an adjunct faculty. She actually scored very highly on a competition, a Cisco competition, and continues to be an adjunct faculty, as well as supporting the apprenticeship programs, the IT apprenticeship program. She now works at SCD Information Technology, where she manages the apprenticeship program there.
So what's the mission of the cybersecurity program at HCC, Patrick?
Okay, I think it's to produce well-rounded individuals like any other educational program. However, with cybersecurity specifically, there's the individual component is to elevate the awareness of cyber within society. So, you know, and to produce technically competent individuals. So we are trying to, you know, prepare people for the workforce, as well as to produce these well-rounded individuals.
And so we've talked about, you know, the fact that we have the certificates, the fact that we are accredited, the fact that we also have the associate's degree track. What makes our program unique, right? Because cybersecurity is something that's out there that we're talking a lot about. It's a booming industry, in my opinion. Why should people, you know, consider coming to HCC? What about HCC makes it unique and the best choice out there for everybody to come and learn about cybersecurity?
Sure. So I'll just give a little bit of history here. HCC, as I mentioned before, started its information security program in 2002. Now it's called cybersecurity. So we were very early. We were pioneers in the field of cybersecurity. In addition, in 2014, HCC launched one of the first dual enrollment high school to community college pathway programs in the country. So we were recognized on a national scale for doing that. Further down the road, in January of 2020, HCC launched its IT apprenticeship program in partnership with AT&T and SCD Information Technology, as I mentioned before. In addition, we have software development apprentices with New Wave Telecom and Technologies. So these apprenticeship programs are very unique. The IT apprenticeship program actually is the only one that we're aware of in the country that offers a security clearance as part of the apprenticeship program. There are other apprenticeship programs that actually offer are offered to people who have clearances already, but to our knowledge, we're the only one aside from Northern Virginia Community College who has mirrored our program with AT&T. This is the only program we're aware of that has that, that includes that clearance.
So we're leading the way in cybersecurity. And if this is a career that you're excited about, we invite you to come. We invite you to go to our website, howardcc.edu. That search by right there. That's my best friend. That's where I go whenever I need to find something. So you can just type there cybersecurity, and that's going to bring you to all of the information, to all of the details. And that's where you can, start kind of like looking into more detail about what Patrick just told us about. And I also did have a conversation with, our apprenticeship department here at HCC, at our apprenticeship program with AT&T, Brenda from AT&T, explain in detail, about the apprenticeship and what they do in partnership with HCC. And I can put that link on our comments at the end of a conversation as well. So you can check that out as well and get a little more insight on what that partnership is. If maybe that's what you're looking for, if you're looking for an opportunity to work and study at the same time, then that apprenticeship program that HCC offers is the right pathway for you. Sung, let's talk a little bit more about the different career options available at HCC for students looking into the cybersecurity world and who want to make cybersecurity their careers.
Yeah, definitely. I can tell you, I was looking at to connect with what Patrick was talking about, BLS, the labor statistics. They have these projection of jobs like in the future, right? And so cybersecurity analyst is a growth. People, I think the big growth is, again, is healthcare, but cybersecurity, due to everything being online and because we have to protect everything, it's growing. A cybersecurity analyst, and I think based upon the report, their average salary is like $87,000. If you imagine a Howard Community College student, so if I go through the college and I go through any of those programs that Patrick mentioned and I finish with a degree, what would be my prospect? And this way, I think some of the things that a lot of students have problems is that I don't have the experience. I just took classes and I have a degree. Yes. But what do I do next? And that's where the college is providing that apprenticeship program. So students can get the experience. But beyond that, there are other things that students can do to promote themselves. But once they're ready, I think the students can choose what the jobs would look like. So MITRE Corporation has a document called SOC, which stands for Security Operational Center. And so every company that cares about security might have a SOC. And if they do have a SOC, they would staff it with three type of people. The first type, which they call tier one, are people that are looking at systems. Like you might get a call to say, my computer is slow, or I've accidentally clicked on this link and I'm worried. And so this tier one person will actually evaluate that and determine, correlated, to make sure, okay, this is real. This isn't just someone clicking on something and accidentally nothing has happened. They would make sure to validate that, to ensure that it's the real thing and there might be a breach, like Patrick kind of talked about. So if there is a breach, that gets passed along to a tier two person who will then analyze to say, okay, it is a breach. The computer has been infected. We have to now go to recovery. We have to now go to analyzing this information, this malware, and then determine how much of damage that has occurred, and then start recovering process. And the tier three person does something more, which is called threat hunting. So instead of waiting for someone to click on something or do something that they shouldn't have, they in turn go and look at the environment, the network, and see if the malware or viruses are out there. And if it's already been reported, they go and hunt for that information to prevent from spreading. And so those are the type of jobs that the Howard Community College graduate could apply to. Depending on your skill set and the certification, like if you do get certification, I think you could go to a tier two to tier three. And I think that's the thing about cyber. You can go into this certificate route. You can get your experience through the apprenticeship, or you can do your competition and your own practice, and then you can demonstrate that to an employer. And so there are a lot of opportunities for people to move around, like Patrick talked about the Cisco instructor.
I would just like to add to this. I think that what we teach in class is fantastic. You learn a lot at HCC, but one thing to keep in mind is that continuous learning is incredibly important, cannot be overstated how important it is in the technology field to educate yourself continuously about new technologies and new ideas. And these things will lead to what really is the development that professionals are looking for. They want to know, what have you done, in addition to just your coursework? So it's those competitions that Sung mentioned. Your professional development. It's participating in, cybersecurity societies. It's, events. It's all of these things. Your networking. And if you want to reach out, Dr. Deborah Curry is our career coach within the STEM Talent Challenge Grant, and she works in our department, and she is available to coach students professionally, and help them to develop their develop themselves in a professional sense, specifically to the IT field.
And, that's exactly kind of where I was going with my next question, because let's say I come to HCC, I get my cybersecurity. How do I define you guys have both kind of said that this is going to be prevalent in every one of every other business, right? Like, if you're looking at the legal, if you're looking at the law, right, and you're looking at the courthouse, they're going to need somebody who takes care of their cybersecurity. If you're looking at the medical field, there's going to be somebody who needs to take care of their cybersecurity. Like, no matter where you look at and what you look at, there's going to be a need for somebody who is doing that work in the back end and protecting that information. So as the career continues to develop and evolve, are there going to be, or are there right now, look, it's specific certifications? Like, if you know that what you want to do is you want to work in the medical field, protecting the cybersecurity, so that something like what Song told us doesn't happen again, right? And saving lives in that way. Are certificates specific for each one of those career paths, or is cybersecurity this one big thing that then is applied to the needs of the other fields out there?
So we have one program. We offer a lot of different certifications. We have one cybersecurity program, I should say. We also have a cloud operations and security certificate program that's just launching right now that focuses on Amazon Web Services. So, there are different kinds of roles, as Sung mentioned, and some of the certifications that we target in these certificate programs and degree programs, will prepare you for a wide variety of jobs and careers. So, it really can't be understated the importance of certification in the IT sector.
And that continuing learning, like you were saying, to continue to be curious and not just settle on, okay, well, I already learned everything I need to know, and now I'm ready to go do my job. It's like, you guys have to really stay abreast and really stay up to date on what's happening and what's changing and what new ways people are trying to access our information so that we can then protect ourselves accordingly. Speaking about that, I have a question that came from a friend and somebody who was watching and listening. And they said, can you ask about, those, we see it all the time on Facebook, where it's like, somebody hacked my account. If you get a message that says that I am traveling and I need money and this and that, don't answer to that. Can you explain to us a little bit of what's happening there? What are we looking at when we're seeing that? Or somebody cloned my account, right? And that's somebody's it's has a new account and they have a picture and they're pretending to be me. What's happening there? How can we protect ourselves? Do we need to be looking at our passwords there? Is that what's happening? Is that how we protect ourselves there? Or is this something that that we can do something about, or are we just totally vulnerable to this kind of attacks?
So, I mean, what's happening is number one, either their account has been compromised. And why that occurs is that people use their email address as their username and password for every account. So Facebook to every other accounts that they have. So when one system is breached and that breach has a password dump, that's out in the internet basically. And so there is a site that you can check if that company, and these are big companies like Adobe was breached, LinkedIn was breached, and their password was exposed. So they have your email address and your password. So what they typically do is they will try that in Facebook. And so if it's successful, then yes, they have your account. This is where they have access to your Facebook profile and they can do exactly what they state, what you stated, which is an urgent need from a friend and with money. And so to protect that, number one, you should, Facebook provides multi-form factor. So if you do lose your account, there, someone still has to have a phone per se to actually log in. And so that's one recommendation that I would have. The other thing is without cloning an account. So what they do is they would follow someone and do a recon of that individual and mirror similarities. And so without taking over account, they can kind of mirror with a picture, because if you have pictures on Facebook and those are public, they can just make a copy. And so again, using more social engineering tactics. And in those scenarios, this is where sometimes you just want to reach out in another means of communication to say, John, I'm emailing you because you put this on Facebook that you want $200 because you're stuck in Nevada and Las Vegas. And so you just want to give someone a call so you can hear that voice. And so you just want to be suspicious. This is where online world, a lot of people are too trustworthy. And you just want to make sure that you just practice a little bit of that cyber hygiene of when you get an alert.
You know, something that happened to me a while back is that my friends started to receive WhatsApp messages, not from my phone number, but supposedly from me. And it was through WhatsApp. And I did not understand how that happened. It was a number from a different state. It was a US number. But I didn't understand how they were accessing my information. I'm guessing it was Facebook. I don't know. But, you know, when those kind of things happen, right? And I mean, it looked very real. It's coming to my phone. It's coming to that safe place that we think, right? Like if we think we're communicating with somebody via text or via phone or WhatsApp, then that's more, it feels, I don't know, it just feels more secure than if it's through a Facebook message, right? The question that I have here is really, you know, because it's scary. It's scary. All of the things that you guys have told us about that can happen and how far it can go. You know, we've even talked about how it can affect somebody's health, you know, in a major type of way. When we're looking at this and we're, you know, one thing that I've learned today and I will certainly do is change and have different passwords for every one of my accounts. Annoying, yes, totally, but we have to do it, right? I can't remember my passwords. I have to ask Siri to show me my password so that I can remember my passwords and access, you know, things many times if I'm trying to enter it through a different portal. But on my phone, right? And if I'm getting these messages and people are getting so so creative about, you know, even sending messages on my behalf to my contacts, how can we protect that information? Where are they getting that information? Is that through the social media platforms? Is that where we need to maybe not have our phones, phone numbers on Facebook? Because I know that's, you know, as I was researching all of that, that's the only place that I can think of. Okay, how are they, what's sending a message through WhatsApp? How are they accessing my contacts? And I was like, it has to be going back to the social media platforms. What information should we be putting out there? You just said it's public. If you have it out there and it's for everybody to see, then it's for everybody to see. Is that the place that we need to be looking at? Is that social media platforms, that place where we, that first measure, that first barrier, what we need to be very, very cognitive of what we're doing? Or is it our phones, or is it our emails?
So I'll just give a short answer. I think that, in my opinion, anything that you put out there on the internet is public information. You can consider it like that, you know, and that's kind of stating something that, you know, that's sort of natural to understand, but, you know, everything that you do is sort of recorded and, you know, it can be found. So it's important to remember that when you're considering your personal privacy.
So just be aware of what you're putting out there into the world, because, you know, it's kind of like in the law, when the police officers come and tell you anything that you do can and will be used against you. Well, now everything that you put on the internet can and in the wrong hands will be used against you. So I guess that's, you know, what we need to be cognizant of, and we just need to be mindful of and be aware of. We only have about 7 more minutes here left. I definitely want to make sure that we give back information to everybody who's listening and watching on how to get in touch with, you know, our department here, how they can come and find out more information, learn more about the certificates. Maybe they want to have a conversation with you guys and ask you questions directly and talk to you more in detail about, you know, what a career is, what your experience has been. So if you could just share that information and tell everybody where they can go to get more information.
Sure. So my name is Patrick Valdivia, and you can look me up in the directory. I'll provide my email, which you can add to the description of this video. You know, in addition, I'd just like to add that, you know, if you're at HCC, if you're a student at HCC, just keep in great contact with your faculty. They're here to support you. They're here to help you, not just, you know, in your classes, but also to develop yourself professionally, personally, the whole nine yards. So, you know, HCC is an extremely supportive environment. So don't hesitate to reach out to the faculty. They actually really like it when you do.
Song, if there's one thing that you want people to remember after our conversation today, what would that be?
I would say wherever you can, enable multi-form factor.
And Patrick, if there was one thing that you want people to go and, you know, after we're done with our conversation today, that they go ahead and take action right away, what would that be?
Action, just, you know, enroll in classes at HCC, stay at HCC. You know, I hope you enjoy your time here, and it's been a pleasure having this conversation.
I thank you both so much. You know, I know that it's a lot of information. I know that we've talked about many things that for most of us, we are aware of it, but we haven't really looked at in deep detail. And I think it's important. That's why October is, you know, Cybersecurity Awareness Month, because we need to have more awareness. We need to get more comfortable talking about it and thinking about it. It can be scary. Or maybe you're not even thinking about it, that you're like so not worried about it, thinking that it's not a thing. It is a thing. It's something that you need to pay attention to. There's easy ways, like, you know, what Patrick and Song have given us ideas today, little tips and things that we can do, easy little things that we can do to protect ourselves today, so we can protect our information, our identity, and really avoid a big hustle, because like Song said earlier, it can take a lot of effort and a lot of time to try to, you know, take back all of that damage that was done to your credit, to your identity, if you end up being a victim of that. Patrick and Song, thank you so much for sharing this time with me today. I really appreciate it. I will put up the links on the comments for a conversation to the previous conversation I had about the apprenticeship, so you can learn more about that. Maybe you're excited about that opportunity. I will also put Patrick's email so you can connect with Patrick. I will put the information where you can find, where you can access, where you can connect with our cybersecurity department here at HCC. And if you have any other questions, you know how you can reach me, you know where to find me, and you know where we are. Thank you so much for listening and for watching. Have a good rest of your day. Share this with everybody. And until next time, I am Cris Oviedo.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.